Shoot the defense, the best podcast in the world. We're out here.
I keep saying Henry's a forward.
Richie, who's the best striker you played against?
Henry.
And the fact that we are now taking our country and put our country on the map of world soccer, being the first African nation, the third world nation in the whole world to win an Olympic gold medal in soccer, you know, it was unbelievable.
If you're going to take the time to go and get a pig head and break my locker open and wrap my clothes in it, that's sending a different message to me.
I've had to protect my family from going out into the street because you'll have random people that just coming up and abusing them racially. Even some old school managers who are British, they still have the same racial undertones like the man in the street who they're trying to condemn.
Hello, good evening, and welcome to a special edition of Shoot the Defence. I'm your host, Stel, and my co-host, as ever, is Mr. Rodriguez. Rod, how you doing?
Yeah, I'm alright, pal. You?
Yeah, all good. All good. Can't complain for once. The weather is... Well, I don't even want to talk about the weather, to be honest. The other day, we'll talk about your golf.
Yeah, it's raining. It's raining down there at the minute, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, well, are you bragging now? Is it sunny in Manchester? Is this something that you're...
Actually, it's blue skies in a minute. Yeah,
oh, piss off! No, I don't want to hear that. How's your golf going? Did you play golf today?
No, rest day today.
Okay. What's your handicap, by the way?
Back. 11.
Your handicap's 11. Okay. So what's professional?
The scratch zero.
Oh, okay, fair enough. I don't know about this sport. Similar to rugby, you can talk to me about.
I'm searching for single figures. I'll get there this year. I'll get there easily this year.
That's a challenge. That's a challenge.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Lovely. Set yourself goals. I love it. Right, our guest. I'll tell you what. To be honest, he surprised us prior to us hitting that record button. He was the Trinidad and Tobago goalkeeper for a good few years, but he's now the goalkeeping coach. It's Kelvin Jack. Kelvin, how you doing, mate?
I'm all right. How are things with you?
Yeah, all good. Again, it kind of messed up my introduction, you giving us that news, but I'm glad that you've got that role. How do you feel about being the goalkeeping coach now? You represented the national team for, what, 32 games? 32 caps?
Yeah, I've played for Trinidad, 34 games officially. I was appointed goalkeeping coach a few months ago. And then COVID-19, as it has done to everyone in the world, has delayed everything, delayed me going over to Trinidad and what have you. So it's just a wait, and whenever I have clearance from the Prime Minister of Trinidad and Tobago and the Health Minister as well, that's the only time I'll be able to travel because the borders are still closed.
That's understandable. Is it Terry Fenwick that's a head coach?
Yeah, Terry's the head coach. He's a fantastic coach. Sometimes I always wonder, how he hasn't been, a manager over here with a top club, because I worked with him a few years ago in Trinidad. He was actually my manager, because Terry has been in Trinidad for about 20 years now. And he's a fantastic coach. He's hard, but, he's so good tactically. And he's a national team manager now, so we're really hopeful that we could do well again and qualify for more World Cups.
Well, fingers crossed, mate. I mean, obviously, it's a very difficult region that you're in, and very competitive. And then once you do go through the qualification phase, anything can really happen. But in terms of the current squad, I think the only real player that I know at the moment is Ryan Telfer, who's playing in Canada at the moment. In terms of the goalkeeping options, the three that you've got at the moment, I think they're in their early 30s. But then again, you know what they say about goalkeepers, they peak very late.
Yeah, goalkeepers tend to have a longer shelf life than outfield players. There are a few boys that we're looking at, we think could go to the next level, but it's about rebuilding. It's about instilling the right work ethic in the players, just changing the culture a bit, so we have more professional players. And the end goal, of course, is qualifications for tournaments and doing well in tournaments, but also trying to get players over here playing at a good level over here in the UK.
Oh, absolutely, mate, absolutely. Now, I was talking to Paul Eiffel a few weeks ago. We were discussing the state of football within the Caribbean and how different football associations are very how shall we say, frugal with their money. Would you say the TNT authorities are very good when it comes to developing youngsters and putting money back into the game?
I think right now, you know, we have a bit of a problem with our federation in that a normalization committee was appointed by FIFA. So that is being sorted out. You know, I have absolutely no doubt it will be sorted out. But I think that if Caribbean countries, and I could say specifically Trinidad and Tobago, if it is, we could become a bit more organized, we could achieve much more because they are fantastic, fantastically talented players on the island, players with a lot of potential, in my opinion, that would interest managers over here because they are so athletic, so strong, so quick. And, you know, those are the type of players that you want, you know, playing at the top level. But they do need that exposure. They need that experience. And if they could showcase their talents on the world stage, without question, I think they'll be interested in them.
Right, absolutely. And you got our mutual friend, Kenwyn Jones, running the youth system.
Yeah, Kenwyn Jones is a top man. And obviously, Kenwyn played at, you know, the top level over here. You know, he's putting his hand into coaching now, which is good because he'll be able to share his experiences as a player over here in England and also as an international footballer. So, you know, could only be positive.
No, absolutely, mate. Absolutely. And, you know, we just mentioned Kenwyn, and he ever so kindly gave us a bit of an exclusive as to how he was treated at Stoke City, and I'm sure you've heard this story before, Kelvin, and I'm not going to go into it again, but the reason why we kind of flipped the script tonight, because we're going to talk about your top five games, but I think discussing the recent topics or the recent events, it's a word I don't like to use because I see events as like a wedding or a cup final. These aren't events, these are just, I can't even go explain it really, but you know, as everyone knows, protesters all over the world have taken to the streets in the wake of George Floyd's death to demand an end to police brutality and systematic racism. Now, whilst Black Lives Matter protesters have conducted themselves in a peaceful manner, opportunists have used the movement as some sort of excuse to power play or a power play to wreak havoc across many cities. Then you have the, in inverted commas, All Lives Matter card players. You see what I did there, right?
Yeah.
People who are either too ignorant to understand the purpose of Black Lives Matter or are just straight up racist. Now, Kelvin, I know you're very vociferous on Facebook about the issue of racism, which you're well within your rights to, my friend, and I stand by you 100%. And I saw a post today, I can't remember whether it was today or yesterday, you said that your boys have been victims of racism as well.
Oh, yeah, 100%. It's really, really... it's such a sensitive issue, but it's an issue that needs to be dealt with. And it needs to be dealt with those in authority, whether, you know, and I'm saying the government. But just going back to my boys, they, of course, yeah, they were racially abused in school. They're only 9 and 11.
Wow.
And they were called nigger. They were called nigger in school. They were called black poo in school. And, you know, it's very, very difficult to explain to an 11-year-old, a 9-year-old, why someone would be saying something like that, because it really does affect them, because they know it's not something that's, it's not a pleasant term. So, and but the hurtful thing in it is the fact that it's always downplayed. By teachers or even the head teacher, it's downplayed. When I think the issue should be met really in a strong way, and when I say in a strong way, I mean in the education side, because the kids who are using these expressions, they would have learned it somewhere, most likely from their parents or from a relative or from a family friend. Because kids are not born that way. Kids have no knowledge of it. So I think the education part is what needs improving. So white people could understand what the black man has been through.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, you hit the nail right on the head when it comes to racism. Now, I've been a little bit critical of the charity Kick It Out, but those are for different reasons. It's got nothing to do with race. I see it as more like a PR thing these days. Well, I'm not going to go into that. But the word education, you've hit the nail right on the head. My daughter's 6 years old, and we're homeschooling at the moment, and one of the subjects they wanted us to work on was the history of Rosa Parks. And trying to explain to a six-year-old what racism and bigotry is, it wasn't uncomfortable for me, but it's just that she just didn't understand it. She could, because she doesn't know any better. Do you get what I'm saying? She doesn't know what this means. So obviously, when you've got 9, 11-year-olds, however that the age that were abusing your children, this isn't something that they've been born into. Well, they have been born into racism. It's not as if they've been born racist. They've been educated to be racist. So again, there's that key word, education.
Yeah, education is key. But going back to it, you know, with regards to my kids, I even contacted the PFA, and the PFA, they came in and they ran a seminar, you know, to the school to try to educate the school about racism and the effects racism would have on the person who's being abused. And you know, hopefully it did help in some way. But in terms of society now, the issue is much deeper, and it's systematic racism. And when you say systematic racism, a lot of people don't understand when you try to say there's systematic racism. And the education side, most people, because they are unaware of the history, whether this is the history of slavery, the history, that history is crucial, because it's for 400 years, black people have suffered that. And it didn't stop when slavery was abolished in 1833. It continues to this day, where in many facets of life, you know, black people haven't been treated equally. And it's really, really disappointing, but it has to change at the top. It's the only way it could change, if it changes at the top.
Oh, absolutely. Rod, we spoke about this briefly a few weeks ago, and you know, you said society won't change until the authorities get their asses in gear, so to speak. Obviously, things have snowballed out of control recently. What's your take on all this?
Well, listen, I was in 1980, we moved to Manchester, and my father was black. My mum was blonde hair, blue eyes, mixed race family. And, you know, I went to school in Salford, and it's not like it is now. It's multicultural now. I was in a school of 1,000 people, and I was the only one of colour in there. So I used to get it. This is 40 years ago, and it is worse now, because there's more voices, there's more people that can have fake profiles, that can say whatever they want and not have no repercussions. So, and, you know, you listen to people... You know, I'm a big fan of the NFL, and it's the same thing in the NFL that it is in English football. The place, the people in power, there's no one of colour to be seen. Coaches, managers, in the higher-ups, in the office of the Premier League or the FA. It's the same with the NFL. And these companies and our players who ultimately are the brand are all or half of colour. So, you know, I listened to Les Ferdinand and listened to Dwight York recently, what he was saying, like, people are not just getting a chance. And, you know, it's there staring your face when you actually look at it. The facts are there. How come there isn't more managers? How come there isn't more, you know, owners of black origin? It's just, you know, it's just massively racist, and it has to be changed.
Kelvin, in all honesty, mate, and I know what the answer is going to be, right? I don't honestly believe that governments are doing enough, right? So, in your opinion, what do they have to implement to change all of this? Because the way I see it, yeah, you know, racism or name-calling is some form of criminal offence, some form of, but I don't think it's taken as strongly as what it should be, so... Changing laws, obviously, but how else, apart from the educational side of things, how else can we move forward?
Moving forward is going to be really really, really difficult, right? And I know you just said apart from the education side of it, but I want to go back to the education side of it for a brief period here, right? The history of British colonialism, it's not really taught in schools, right? So the kids don't know the history of British colonialism. They don't know the history of slavery. And I'm aware that it's quite uncomfortable to say that the atrocities that happened in the colonial days is what was perpetrated by the British. But I think it's necessary, because let's look at it this way, okay? If someone offends you, if they come and they apologize to you, yes, you may still be angry, but you're in a position where you could say, you know what, they apologize. And I think that's one of the biggest things. Britain has refused to apologize for slavery and colonialism and imperialism. If Britain apologizes for slavery and say, listen, you know what, we shouldn't have done this. We shouldn't have taken you from your lands, bring you over here, murder you, rape you, maim you. We shouldn't have done that. And you know what? We are sorry. We are sorry. And we want to make this up to you. We want us to live in unity. But that has never happened. And it hasn't happened because of the fear of reparation payments. Mm. Now, let's be honest. If Britain comes out and apologizes, and it's not only Britain, it's France, it's Holland, it's Spain as well, right? But I'm talking about Britain because I live here in England, right? If this happens and Britain apologizes for slavery and agrees reparation payments to the countries that have been affected by slavery, that is when healing would begin. That is when healing would begin. Then the healing process could really start. Because it's difficult to remain really angry with someone when they have said sorry. And sorry is a word that's underutilized. Saying sorry. But as long as it did, you know, the powers that be are quite bellicose in their tone. You listen to what's her name again? I've forgotten him. One of the ministers in government.
Oh, is it Priti Patel? Is that the one that you're talking
Priti
about?
Priti Patel, sorry. Yeah. Priti Patel, she was, you know, quite critical, you know, of the statue going down in Bristol.
Mm.
And I just couldn't understand it, because let's think about this for 1 minute, right? Slavery was barbaric. And you have a slave trader with his statue up overlooking the city, in the city center. How disrespectful that is to a black person. Let's really analyze that for a minute. That is incredibly disrespectful to a black person. And to think that there will be people who would want those statues to remain there, it just defies logic. It defies belief. Belief. How is it healing could happen? Healing could take place if those statues are not removed. They've got to be removed, because without it being removed, it's always in your face that this is what we did to you. This is what we did to your ancestors. And even today, we are going to oppress you by not treating you equally.
Mm. Well, see, this is it. I mean, I think the biggest example that I can probably think of in modern history in the UK of this form of racism is Grenfell, and how everything has just been covered up. It's almost as if, you know, it's almost as if it was like an ethnic cleansing, wasn't it?
It is, and, you know, straight away, you know, with that, you could see, if that fire happened in a more affluent area,
mm-hmm.
there is absolutely no way the tenants would have been treated like that. Impossible. And let's not kid ourselves. You know, there will be so many people who would say, no, that's not true. But people need to be honest with themselves. Let's be honest. And people do need to read. They need to educate themselves. Let me give you a statistic here. Do you know a black Caribbean child 4 times more likely to be excluded from school? That's a fact. That's studies that have been done that shows that things are not equal. And they're excluded from school for the same misdemeanor that a white child may have done. That's just not fair. Right? And until those things are addressed by government and the likes of Boris Johnson, they have the power to effect so much change, to change the way things are right. It's incredible. Those guys could become heroes. But instead of admitting there's a problem, it's always a denial that, oh, yeah, Britain is very multicultural. Britain is this, Britain is that. Hold on a minute. So you're telling me hundreds of millions of black people all over the world are protesting, are unhappy about certain things, but we don't want to admit and say, you know what, this does happen. Come on, you know what? Let's fix this. Let's make sure that everyone is treated equally. And that's all it is. Just it's a matter of being treated equally.
Yeah, and the thing is, this has gone on for, you know, as long as I can remember. I mean, I'm 39, I'm going to be 40 this year, but I could just about remember the Broadwater Farm riots in Tottenham. And even then, I mean, even to this day, that part of London still hasn't recovered from it. I know Tottenham has become more of a, I don't know, more aesthetically pleasing area because they've rebuilt the stadium, White Hart Lane, and they've gentrified a lot of the area, but the riots in 85, it still haunts the place to this day. And again, it just goes back to what you said about, you know, the government not really giving a shit. Let's be real. Just tell it like it is.
Yeah, the government have so much power to effect change. So much power. Matthew Hancock was asked a question the other day on one of the morning shows, and he was asked the question, how many black people are in parliament, in the cabinet? And he couldn't answer. I stood there looking at him, and he was trying everything in his power not to answer that question. And it became almost embarrassing. I, as a viewer, looked at him and started feeling sorry for him. And I'm there and I'm prompting, I'm like, come on. Just admit and say, no, there are no black people. And you know what? We need to look at that. We need to find the reason why that is so. If they begin to say things like that, what do you think would be the reaction of the black population? The black population would put their hands up and say, you know what? He's admitted it, you know? And he's saying that he's going to change things. And that's a start. But the more that the government tries to hide it, and the powers that be try to give the impression that it does not exist, the more protests they're going to be. Look, Roger just said it. 40 years ago, he was dealing with it. That's 40 years ago. We're in 2020 and we're still dealing with it. And things seem to not to be stagnant. It seems to be getting worse.
Yeah, you know what, Kelvin? I see these All Lives Matter people, right? And I work in Hoddesdon, and the moment I found out that there was going to be a Black Lives Matter protest, I knew what was going to happen because there's a whole heap of people in that area, and they're a certain way inclined. Do you get what I'm saying? I mean, I'm not black. You know, I'm Greek Cypriot, you know, and even I get a few looks. Do you get what I'm saying? Which is weird because there's a lot of Italians in that area. So I don't know whether I'm just a darker, I don't know, tan. I've got, I don't know. But I knew what was going to happen. So when I saw the video of the, you know, this one guy saying, oh, was it, he was saying, black people murder, stab black people, all that kind of stuff, 90% of them, this and that. And I'm like, this is just, it was predictable. It was predictable. Yeah. And again, people just like to dig up, or should I say, they like to invent statistics and invent facts when they actually haven't seen it with their own eyes. The media is to blame for this. I blame the BBC. I blame ITV. I blame Channel 4. I bloody well blame Sky for a lot of what's going on. And it doesn't help that we've got these 24-hour news channels that are constantly regurgitating the same rhetoric. In fact, they've all got agendas, haven't they? And no matter how they portray that they are balanced and they have their own, you know, they sit on the fence and they're for both sides, and in fact they're more Black Lives Matter than it. They're not. They clearly aren't. But at the end of the day, as long as they're getting the viewers, it means more people are going to be watching the show and they're going to get more money off adverts and whatnot. That's how it works.
Absolutely. And I keep going back to education. And if I was a white person, right? If I was a white person, because there are many, and I'll tell you what, most white people are not racist. I have so many white friends, pleasant people, you could imagine. But it's the minority that's making it bad for everyone. There are a minority of white people who are very racist. There is a minority, right? The majority of people, they are so oblivious to what's happening that they just can't understand it. And that's how you know that someone is not a racist, when they're just almost naive to it, because they're like, what, people? Nah, it's, you know, surely that doesn't happen. Mm. When you have someone like that, you know they're not a racist. But then there's the other group who try to bring up things that a black person would have done. So they would say, oh, black people killed black people, this black guy, he killed this person, that person. And we're like, yeah, of course they've got to be punished, they are criminal. Yes, they have to be punished, but the statistics are damning. Do you know in the United States, right, over the last 8 years, 85 black men have been murdered by white policemen. Do you know what the conviction rate is? Over 91% of these officers walked free.
What the hell?
Walked what free.
The hell?
Over 91% of the officers walked free. And we're not forgetting about cases over here as well. Our own Gillian Atkinson was tasered and died.
That's right, yeah. That's right.
A couple years ago. But we don't see these things in the media. The media always tries to hide these things. And it needs to be looked at. The only way we could rid ourselves of racism is that if we really tackle it head on. And yes, it's not going to be nice. It's not going to be pretty. But at the end of the day, if it is, you really confront the problem, that's the only time you'll be able to effect change.
I agree, mate. I agree.
Yeah.
Rod?
No, I totally agree. Totally agree.
All right. It grows on, yeah.
No, but everything's been said, though. It just needs to be... Just everything needs to be picked up and start again. You know, from the history books at school to the lot, everything just needs to be a reboot. And, you know, it starts with the statues that need to come down. And, you know, other ones you can obviously debate about, because, you know, but it just, there's a lot of things that need to happen, and it's going to take a long, long time. Because like I said, it's 40 years ago, and it's still going on. And, you know, and the people that were racially abusing me, now they've had kids, and they probably have kids, and it just goes on and on and on. So if you don't educate these kids, you know, it's just going to keep going on and on and on. But, you know, in these places, in the high powers as well, how many black kids do you think go eating? Not many.
Yeah, right. But see, this is it. I was talking to a work colleague the other day, and he was one of those, oh, well, I believe that all lives matter, this and that. And I had to... I had to be diplomatic, because obviously you've got to be professional in the workplace. And I was like, well, yeah, I was like, well, it's not that the whole Black Lives Matter movement isn't, they're not saying that black lives are more important than white lives. It's just that right now it's a conversation that needs to be discussed. It's something that we need to talk about. It's something that we need to emphasize. Of course, everyone's lives matter. All lives do matter. But right now, the black lives are the ones that are being oppressed, continuously oppressed. And it's never ending.
Stel, come on, let's cross say this further. If people are saying all lives matter, then they're clearly underlying race. They're racist. Because that's not what we're saying. And we know all lives matter, but that's not what we're talking about.
Exactly. I had to describe it and explain it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but you can still explain it, but there's still... Go on, sorry, Kelvin, go on.
No, I was just saying that you're absolutely right. It's not a matter of, you know, black people are more important than white people. We are saying that, listen, our lives matter. And what has happened to us, the way we're being murdered, the way crimes against us are also being covered up as well. It's like, come on, this is too blatant now. Black lives matter. Our lives matter. Just as the same if it was a white person who was murdered. So it's not us trying to think we are more important than the other. And that's the way some people try to make it look. But that's not what Black Lives Matter mean in any way, shape or form. Mm. Going up, I need to just touch on something here, all right? And, you know, just something about the statues. And it's something I said in one of my Facebook posts. Let's think about Adolf Hitler for 1 minute, all right? A despicable man, someone who committed genocide, and without question, probably one of the most evil figures in the history of mankind. But where are his statues? He committed genocide, and we will not dare, no one would dare put up a statue of Adolf Hitler. But why is it correct to have a statue of Cecil Rhodes? Why? Why? He's a slave trader. Why do we think it's okay to have a statue of him? It can't be okay. He did the same, he committed the same crimes as Adolf Hitler. So we have to think about it in that way. If we put up a statue of Adolf Hitler, we would be disrespecting Jews to an unimaginable degree.
Mm.
How? What would a Jew feel like if it is we do something like that? That's a slap in the face.
Yep.
Absolute slap in the face. So it's the same thing when you have these figures up. It's just not right. It's just not in good taste. And as Lewis Hamilton rightfully said, that statue should be left at the bottom of that harbour in Bristol. Should be just left there, the statue of Colson. Just left at the bottom of the harbour. Because that is exactly what he did to innocent people that he traded.
Yeah, that's right. So yeah, I mean, I did a bit of research on Cecil Rhodes the other day, because I didn't know who he was, to be honest. And again, it goes back to education. I wouldn't have known who he was unless that statue was ripped down. Yeah, obviously he's his time in South Africa. We know all about apartheid and what Nelson Mandela did to change things down there. And
with all the diamonds, you know, he controlled the diamond market in the world. People don't know that. By not good means as well. Look, come on, we've got to take those statues down. The statues got to go. They've got to go. Healing needs to start. We've got to live in unity. Come on. Well, it's got to happen.
Well, this is they were vandalising the Winston Churchill one, and that really caused a stir. And yeah, see, this is it. I'm not, you know, okay. I was born in the UK, and I know I'm probably going to lose a lot of listeners for saying this, but I'm not a patriot. I'm not. I don't have that connection, if that makes sense. Do you get what I'm saying? So I speak my mother tongue. I speak Greek, you know. So yeah. I don't have that love, that patriotism, like the people that are British or British born and British born and bred, so to speak. So I can't relate to this whole, you know, love for Winston Churchill. But I could, and it sounds really, how can I put it, biased for me to say, but I can see why there's the disdain for him as well.
Well, let me say this about Winston Churchill, right? And there is a huge percentage of people here in England who hold Winston Churchill in very high esteem, okay? But not because someone did. Okay, he was the, what do you call it? He gave Britain hope during the war. He led from the front during the war. But not because someone does something like that exonerates them for some of the evil that they did.
Mm.
Does that make sense? If someone is a serial killer, does that, by him treating his mum well, does that exonerate him from all those heinous crimes? It doesn't. And in 1943, Winston Churchill, wheat that was heading to India, Winston Churchill ordered that wheat redirected to Europe to feed his troops. That caused the death of over 3 million Indian in Bengal. Over 3 million. Anyone who's doubting me, it's very easy. Just look it up, type in Churchill, India, anything. It comes up straight away. Right? So 3 million Indians starved to death as a result of that. When Winston Churchill was questioned about that, he said, "I hate the Indians anyway because they are beastly people with a beastly religion." That are his exact words, unquote. You can look on in any historical book. Those are his quotes, all right? Also, he was also challenged. So even back then in 1943, you had officials here in Britain who was trying to challenge the status quo of racism. And he was challenged about it, about his decision. You know what? They said, "Mr. Prime Minister, a lot of people are dying here. A lot of innocent lives are being lost. Would you reconsider it? Would you reconsider and have that wheat feed those people?" He totally ignored them. And you know, and this is what he said. He said, "Has Gandhi died yet? Gandhi needs to die." Now, if you don't know history, you wouldn't know what I just said to you there. So you're talking about millions of Indians were essentially murdered because Winston Churchill denied them food. Denied them food. Isn't that not genocide? That's genocide. Mm. So, yes, for many people, Winston Churchill is viewed as a hero. But he also did some very, very terrible things that needs addressing. It does need addressing. And which, that is why, you know, Priti Patel's remarks the other day, it shocked me. Because her father is Ugandan. Yep. She, I think it's a Ugandan father and an Indian mother. Or could be the other way around, right? But I know she has Ugandan heritage and Indian heritage. Now, Ugandans were slaves, and the Indians, they were indentured laborers as well. So that's why it really shocked me that she was so vociferous in her claim that the statue of Colson shouldn't have gone down in the harbour. I'm not saying, I know she's a public official and she wants to be politically correct, but she also have to understand the pain that a certain group of people have endured because of that statue and because of what that statue represents. So we have a lot of healing to do as a society, but that healing must start from the top. If the top could admit that, yes, there's a problem, and we want to work with you to fix that problem, those protests would stop tomorrow. They would stop tomorrow. And you have meetings. How can we improve things? How can we make the justice system fairer for the black man? How can we make the school, the education experience fairer for the black man? And when I say fairer, on par with a white person. That's all it is. It's just being on par with a white person. That would create so much peace and unity, you know, throughout the world. It wouldn't even be funny. It's just have so much peace and unity.
But I try not to watch the news because it's, you know, as I said before, they've got their own agendas and whatnot. But has Boris Johnson actually acknowledged the protests? Has he said anything about them? Because I know he spoke about COVID today. And that's pretty much it. And he said, I've read the tweet earlier about him saying that, you know, the rioters must face the full force of the law or something like that. But I don't know how true that is, but I don't know.
He did say something to that effect. And of course, we know there's a pandemic going on and what have you. And let's think about it. A pandemic is going on. Black people and ethnic minorities seem to be affected in a much harsher way by the virus, but yet they are still going out and protest. So they're risking their lives.
Mm.
And a lot of people say, yeah, they're risking their lives and they're also risking other people's lives as well. But when would be the right time to protest? Is there a right time? During the panic, the pandemic of 1918, 1919, did that stop racial division? It didn't stop it. There was a pandemic going on and there was still racism back then.
Mm.
If that makes sense. So there is never a right time to do it. There's never a right time. But the mere fact that people are out there right now protesting in the middle of a pandemic shows you how strongly they feel about the racism that's present right now in British society. You know, America, I think America is at a different level. I'll give you a story. You know, Roger, you just hear this. I went to school in America. I attended a junior college in America, Yavapai College, and then I was due to attend Virginia Commonwealth University.
Mm.
So I went over to Virginia. You would go over and you would, you know, watch the school and, you know, they'll take you around the school and what have you. So while I was there, I would go out for a run. So I went out for a run. I had no clue that was Confederate country.
Oh, no.
So I'm out there running and having a jog and what have you. When I get back to where I was staying, a guy stopped me and he's like, brother, are you mad? So I'm looking at him like, you know, what's he talking about? What's wrong with you? He's like, man, this is Confederate country. You're going running and you're just running out there with them houses. And it's only you out there. It's like you're lucky one of them didn't put the pit bull on you.
Okay, no.
And it just struck me right there. And I'm like, is he honestly serious? And straight away, I started researching and I started looking at it. And I'm like, Kelvin, you must have been absolutely mad to just go running in a place like this when there were still reports of lynching back then. And this is in the 90s. So it's just incredible what's happening. But, you know, my take on it is that it could be easily resolved. And it comes with just saying the word sorry. If you say sorry, people react differently. They react differently. Yes, there's still going to be anger. And people are not going to forget. But it's very difficult to stay angry with someone when they have apologized, and they've apologized in a sincere way. It's very difficult to stay angry with someone when they say sorry to you.
Mm. Do you think the apology would have come had Corbyn been elected?
It probably would have. And we have to think about, would an apology sort this issue once and for all? It wouldn't sort it once and for all, but it would improve it. Would reparation payments sort the issue once and for all? It wouldn't sort it once and for all, but it would improve it. Between Britain, France, Belgium, Holland, they could come up with £200-300 billion. Approach these countries and say, listen, we are sorry for what we did. We would like to compensate you guys for all the natural resources we took from you and the slaves that we took from your country. We know we can't bring it back and we can't change history, but we are sorry for doing that to your country and to your people. And if that is done, we may have a chance of proper healing taking place, real healing. What are black people going to say then? Think about it. What are black people really going to say then? The only thing you could say is, well, okay, they've said sorry. We're being compensated. There are changes happening. They're looking at the justice system. They're looking at education. There have been changes. They're looking at sport, that black and ethnic minorities have to be interviewed for a managerial position. We will not have too much to complain about. We're not much to complain about, but the powers that be will not do that. It just wouldn't happen. I can't see it happening.
Well, the thing is, what you've got to take into consideration, I think they did a census back in 2011. That's the last year I could find any figures on the amount of black residents within the UK. And that was 3%. 3% of the UK is made up of black residents. So much as I said it with the United States, because I think their demographic is 12%. Is it 12? 12%? 15%, yeah. So in all fairness, what chance have they got? I mean, it's just overrun. It's completely overrun.
It's sometimes when you look at it, it's really difficult to see change happening.
Mm.
And sometimes it's even demoralizing to think, you know, where is this change really going to come from? You know, you have this hope. You could write articles, you could say different things, but let's think about football for 1 minute. What is football really going to do? Football doesn't tackle the issue tough enough. Football, they're still quite lenient with people who are racist, fans who are racist. I'll tell you what, if UEFA comes out, or the FA comes out, and finds a club, let's say, okay, you fine £10 million because your fans were chanting racist things to players. I'll tell you what, clubs would make sure there's an absolute zero tolerance. But the punishment handed down are usually laughable. They'll fine a country or a club £50,000. £50,000, that's a couple days' wages for a Premier League footballer.
Mm.
That is not really going to have any effect to eradicate racism in sports and football. It's not going to have an effect. You need to come down very, very hard on it. But again, it's a societal issue. It's a societal issue.
Well, yeah, I mean, UEFA, they dish out their little, you know, their little fines and their stadium bans. But let's be honest, we've discussed it on numerous occasions on the show, Kelvin. You know, when we talk about European football from time to time, and more often than not, we always hear a story about racism, be it Balotelli or be it, you know, happening in Bulgaria, etc., in Montenegro, and you're seeing fines of 23,000 euros or 18,000 pounds, and you're thinking, well, how can anyone take that serious? I mean, 18 grand isn't what, that's like what, 10% of what they make on a match day? It's ridiculous.
It's laughable. The fines are laughable. Fines are laughable. And as Rodri mentioned at the beginning of the show, when you look at Dwight York's interview this week, when he talks about his struggle to even get an interview to be a manager. Now, Dwight York was a top player in this country. Played for Aston Villa, played for Man United, you know, prolific striker. Dwight York was my captain for Trinidad and Tobago. And you know what? He's absolutely right, because I listened to everything he said. Dwight York is one of the most professional players I've ever seen. As captain for Trinidad and Tobago, that guy is a seriously hard worker. He stays back after practice, and you see him doing his core, his push-ups. I would go to his room to ask him for something, and he's still doing push-ups in his room 2 hours after training has stopped. So this is a guy who was dedicated to his craft. And he's dedicated to becoming a football manager now. And he made the point of the likes of Steven Gerrard and Frank Lampard getting chances straight away from their, you know, as soon as their playing career ended, they got chances to manage at the top level. And then you look at Sol Campbell, he has to start at Macclesfield. You look at Dwight York, he can't get in anywhere. And now, this is not the fault of Steven Gerrard or Frank Lampard. That's not their fault. And this is what a lot of people don't understand with the term white privilege. Because there's systematic racism, even in football, Dwight York is not being looked at as an equal to Steven Gerrard or Frank Lampard. This country has been blessed with so many talented black players. So many talented black players. And as Gareth Southgate said, rightfully said, black players are going to stop doing our, we're going to stop doing our qualifications, because what's the sense? What you know, does it make sense to go in and do your UEFA B badge, your pro license, when you're not even going to get an interview? And these courses are not cheap. Not cheap.
Yeah, that's right.
So does it make sense, spending thousands and thousands of pounds to get yourself qualified when you're not going to get a job? It doesn't make sense. So it has to be addressed. The issue is there. But I just wouldn't hold my breath. I'm not going to hold my breath.
Well, see, this is it. I mean, I can see why Gerrard and Lampard got the high-profile jobs, because they're high-profile names. I mean, Gerrard is a Liverpool legend, one of the biggest clubs in the world, and Lampard is a Chelsea legend. And I can see why. But then when I see other managers who perhaps have done more in their career, like you said, Dwight York, why? There's got to be... Okay, obviously, the racism is an issue, and I'm not doubting that for one second. I mean, look at Frank Rijkaard. He won the Champions League at Barcelona, and then he ended up in Turkey and then Saudi Arabia, and then he hasn't done anything since. So you're thinking, wow, this guy basically helped, he kind of propped Guardiola up, didn't he? You know? Mm-hmm. So why is he not getting jobs? I've seen Giovanni Van Bronckhorst, he's now gone to the United States. He did all right at Feyenoord, then he's gone to the United States to manage NYCFC. We've got Patrick Vieira, but again, I've just given three examples out of how many possibilities. But then when you see the likes of Alan Pardew continuously getting roles. No disrespect, right? But Alan Pardew what has he done in his managerial career? Okay, he's got a couple of teams promoted into the Premier League. He signed a 6-year contract, or was it 9-year contract at Newcastle, only lasted three. Yeah? And he ended up in Holland to keep a team up, and it's only because they cancelled the season that they stayed up.
Yep.
So what is it that he's got that perhaps Dwight York doesn't have?
Lots of managers like that still.
We've spoken about this before, Rod.
You've got a manager that I'm not going to name names, but you've got a manager that's served a prison sentence that gets a job.
Yeah, absolutely, Rodri.
So absolutely. Think if that guy was black, he would have got a job. No way would he have got a job.
Absolutely, Rodri.
But because he talks well, he talks intelligently, but, you know, even though basically he used to be a thug, but no, he'd been given a chance, and rightly so. But are them chances been given to black people? No, they're not.
That's a powerful, powerful statement. Powerful statement. And it just brings a sense of reality.
Makes you wonder, doesn't it?
Shocking.
Makes you wonder. Blimey. Well, Kelvin, we've taken up an hour of your time, mate. Really appreciate you jumping on, and I hope you can come on again and we can discuss a few other things, perhaps your top five matches and whatnot. And you had a really good list there, to be fair, but obviously this conversation is far more important, and I'm glad we've had it, because I could tell on your Facebook status you've been, as I said, you've been frustrated, you've been angry, especially with a lot of people. And the thing is, when it comes to a situation like this, Kelvin, I'm sure you'll agree, and Rod will agree, you tend to find out who the good eggs are, you know, the good people, just by a Facebook status that you put up or just by seeing someone else's timeline. It's incredible how social media can give people so much power to air their views. But people are so irresponsible sometimes.
Disappointed for me, and one of the things I said, I've got zero tolerance for it. But something that I really try to do before I would probably delete someone, I try to educate them. I try to get them to become a black person for a short while, and to look at the world through a black person's eye, and to think, if I was a black person, would this affect me? And if the answer is not yes, we've got a problem there. Mm. There is a problem. And it's good when people come up with their statuses, because they're able to just separate, you know, those who have racist views and those who really want us to just live in peace and unity and just live and be happy. You know, geez, I'm Trinidadian, man. We just like to chill. We just like to relax. You know, we're not fighters. We're lovers. You know, but it's difficult to be happy when things like this are so prevalent. It's just so disappointing. Honestly, I will admit on the air here, sometimes it brings me to tears, you know. Honestly, it brings me to tears sometimes when, you know, when my son came home and, you know, he said that, you know, what was said to him, man, it you know, at the time he would have been 10. Mm. Yeah, he would have been 10. And when he said that, yeah, I looked at his face and I'm like, there are no words to describe it. There are no words.
Well, see, this is it. I think because, you know, you've felt it, you know what it's all about, you've experienced it. But when it's your own child, it cuts you even deeper, because not only because you love them and whatnot, but it's the innocence, and it's slowly, slowly being taken out of them by society.
Yeah, it's not nice. You know, it's really, really not nice at all. And, you know, even my youngest, he could tell that, you know, how much it affected my older boy as well, and he would ask me a question at night, you know, Daddy, why did these people say these things? Why do they say it? And I'm there doing bedtime, and I have to try to make sense out of all of this for,
yeah,
you know, a little child. You know, it's not right. Honestly, it's not right. It's really not right. And I just hope that things change and get better.
Yeah. Well, look, it's not going to get better when you have the likes of Luis Suarez and a certain former England captain, you know, virtue signalling, you know? You know, when I saw that LinkedIn post from Luis Suarez or someone posted on social media, I'm thinking, you got some fucking cheek, honestly.
Jesus. Don't even start me on that. Don't even start me on that. You know, his punishment was laughable. His punishment was laughable.
Yep.
How about banning him for a year?
Yep.
From all forms of football, all football activity.
Well, do you know what's ironic? Cantona got banned for a year for actually kicking out racism.
And you're right. You're absolutely right. So Cantona got banned for 15 months for that. But, don't even start me on that. Honestly, don't even start me on the likes of Suarez and these guys. Don't start me on that.
And do you know what made it even worse? I mean, if the club came out and they did their proper investigations and, you know, they said, right, he's made a mistake, this and that, we're going to deal with it internally, I think you could accept it a little bit. But when you have the manager getting players to wear T-shirts and, mate, that was the biggest cock-up that club could have done.
It was massively disappointing, but you know, you have Jamie Carragher a couple months ago, admitted that Liverpool dealt with it the wrong way. And he admitted that he dealt with it the wrong way because they were all in support of Suarez. And then when the facts presented themselves, they should have changed the way it was. But they kept supporting Suarez. To send a message, Suarez should have been banned a minimum a year, fined £250,000. And I guarantee you, that would be a deterrent for players. All, you know, any player who's racist or what have you, that would have been a deterrent to not do it anymore. But, you know, you fine him, if memory serves me right, I think he was fined £40,000.
Yeah, 40 grand. Yeah, 40 grand. You know,
at that time, Suarez would have been on, what, £160,000-£170,000 a week?
Yeah.
You know, he's probably got 40 grand in his sofa, just laying in a sofa. You know, it's a nonsensical fine.
Yeah.
Oh well.
Yeah. I just, you know, I chuckle when I think of what Dalglish said, where he goes, let's not let him walk alone. I'm like, Kenny, honestly, yeah. Kenny, honestly. But yeah, it is what it is. Unfortunately, it's done. What's done is done, and yeah. What can we say? Well, look, one more thing before I let you go, Kelvin. In terms of, you mentioned the PFA earlier, and I know there's been a bit of a back and forth with, I think, was it Marvin Sordell and Kitson? And Kitson's got some involvement in the PFA now. Now, you mentioned, as I said before, you mentioned the PFA helping out to educate your kids' school. Do you think this new era is going to make any difference?
I quite like Dave Kitson because I can remember him briefly. Reading was the first club I came to, signed for in the UK.
That's right.
And Dave Kitson was there at the time. And, you know, he's a very serious guy. He was very professional. And I like the things he said, the direction he wants to take the PFA. I'm not saying Gordon Taylor didn't do a fantastic job. I'm not saying. But what I'm saying is that Dave Kitson, I believe, you know, that is the type of dynamism you need right now to get the PFA going, in my opinion, and to really start making bold decisions, you know, on racism and things like that. So, and it would be good because he's a white man. But I also know he's a man. He's a very respectable person. And this is me only having a brief encounter with him, but you could just tell when you see people and the way they conduct themselves that he's a man of good character.
But did you see the Instagram posts of him where he was winding up people and putting black footballers and naming them wrong just to get a rise out of people? Did you see that?
I have not seen that. No? I have not seen that. So no. That's news to me.
Yeah, because he was absolutely ripped apart on social media because he said something about Raheem Sterling, I think, in terms of, you know, he's spending a lot of money on cars and this and that. And then someone pointed out, well, you did practically the same thing. And then they kind of showed the photograph of him. I'll send you the link on Facebook when I find you.
I did not see that. Yeah. I did not see
and that's why a lot of players were up in arms about it.
He was posing in front of like two guards and saying what day it was or something like it.
Oh my God, you got to be kidding me.
No. It's what is it?
Well, it just shows you. Look, that just shows you right there that I'm absolutely gutted to hear that, you know. I'm absolutely gutted to hear that.
Yeah, I mean,
there I am thinking that, oh, okay, we have someone who could come in and do something and really, shake things up. And then he's going doing that, you know, mocking Raheem Sterling. Because I can remember Raheem Sterling when he defended the young Manchester City player.
Yeah.
When he was, you know, buying a house for his mum and that.
Yeah.
I can remember that.
Yep.
And that had racist undertones with it, because it was a black player doing it.
Well, yeah, they
absolutely gutted. Absolutely gutted. Gutted.
Yeah, I'll send you the link, because I think Dave Kitson went on TalkSport to explain his comments and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, let's have a look. Let me just find the link. I've got it in front of me. It's a bit low. Dave Kitson apologises for clumsy language after Raheem Sterling suffered racist abuse. So yeah, there's a whole heap of stuff that he's done, and people are actually digging it out. And
Jesus.
Yeah.
I'm gutted. Absolutely gutted.
Yeah, gutted. But listen, again, you just don't know Kelvin. You just don't know people what they're like behind closed doors. Do you know what I mean?
And in saying that as well, some of the people I've deleted from Facebook have shocked me.
Mm.
Have absolutely shocked me. And I'm thinking, I'm like, wait, we talk all the time.
Yeah.
You talk to my kids.
Yeah.
You know? And how could you come out and make a statement like that now? So is that the way you view me?
Yeah, exactly. There it is.
So all those years I knew you, you always viewed me as someone who was lesser than you. Right? And some of these people I've known for years. Mm. And you know, this is a perfect example here. Look, Dave Kitson, on the surface, looks as though he is a man of integrity. He looked a great professional. The way he carried himself, he was so friendly. And then making those comments, that's sloppy, that's clumsy, that's it. That's irresponsible to be making these comments.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, so, sorry to be the one to break that news to you, mate.
But you know what, listen. That's what he said, and I'm glad I know.
Well, I'll send you the links to the stuff. I mean, you could just do a Google search and just type in, you know, Dave Kitson and Raheem Sterling, and you'll see a whole heap of headlines, and, you know, that you can find the video on TalkSport's website of him going on the show to discuss his comments. But I know players like Joby McInerney are unhappy. There was, I think it was Marcus Bean. Is it Marcus Bean that's at Brentford, I think? I'm not sure. There's a few other players. Ian Wright may have been one as well. Wasn't Ian Wright one, Rod?
Yeah, I think he was, yeah.
Yeah, so Wrighty went out on social media and he had a go as well. So he's obviously done something wrong. So yeah, I said don't quote me on that, but I don't know exactly what he said. I can't remember exactly what he said, but he did say a few things and did do a few things on Instagram, which I believe he's now taken down. But yeah, well, look, let's see if he's going to earn $2 million a year like Gordon Taylor to sit on his backside to do nothing. But anyway.
Oh, well, I don't want him in there. As I'm saying, I have zero tolerance, because there's nothing positive about it at all. There's nothing positive with racism. There's zero tolerance. I don't want him on there.
I've just fucked up a friendship on my podcast. Sorry, Kelvin.
I've got zero tolerance. Zero tolerance. And you must have zero tolerance.
Yeah, I agree, mate. I agree. Well, look, I hope things improve. I really hope they do, because, you know, it's a societal problem, as we've discussed, and, you know, and we've said it on numerous occasions, and, you know, change needs to be made. people need to stand up and realise, and people need to stand up and be counted as well, and be held accountable for their actions. And I hope that the next time we have this, have a conversation, Kelvin, on the podcast, or just in general, that it'll be much more jovial.
Yeah, let's hope so, and we can really talk about football.
Absolutely.
Because football is on its way back.
Absolutely, that's what it is. That's what it is. And are you looking forward to your old clubs doing a few bits and pieces here and there?
Yeah, you know, I always follow my old clubs. You know, the likes of Dundee and Gillingham. I do have a affinity for Dundee, especially in Scotland. But it's good to see top flight football back. Obviously, Germany has led the way, and they've shown that, you know, although there's a pandemic, they could, you know, get football going again. Spain restarts as well. So, fingers crossed that the infection rate stays low, and we could get sport going again, because we know how important sport is. We know how important football is, you know, to society. It's so important. So, I'm just keeping my fingers crossed that, you know, the games are played and, you know, there are no infections, although, to be fair, footballers are very, very fit people. And I would be very surprised if a footballer is very unwell from COVID-19. You know, the people we have to think about are the managers and, you know, the coaches and the bus driver and the tea lady and people like that, who are a bit older and probably not as fit as a footballer. So, you know, I'm just keeping my fingers crossed that, you know, that there's no major incident.
Absolutely, mate. And, yeah, one more thing before I let you go. Are you on any socials that you like to plug, like a Twitter or an Instagram or anything like that?
I'll tell you what, I do have an Instagram account, and I have over 100 messages. Why is it I don't join Instagram and come onto Instagram and Twitter and what have you? I've considered it, and I may go on.
Yeah, stay away from Twitter for now, just for now. let things simmer down a little bit, because what you will see is, Anyway, we'll leave it at that. Well, look, thank you again for your time, Kelvin. Really appreciate it. And hopefully we'll have you on sometime soon.
All right, thanks for having me on.
Cheers, mate. Anytime.
Cheers, Kelvin. Speak soon.
Okay, take care, Roger. Take care, guys.
Cheers, mate. All the best.
Okay, all right.
Good night.
See
you. Bye. Right, that was Kelvin Jack. And a bit of an eye-opener there. This is the first time I ever spoke to Kelvin, and got to respect his views, mate. A very, very strong
one. You've got to understand, so many people have got so much to say and got so much anger. So you've got to understand it. It's a lifetime of it. So,
yeah.
You know, it's a real, real, real movement, this. It seems like this is a real change. So people are really getting things off the chest.
Well, yeah, listen, it's great that they're getting things off their chest, but the thing is, will things change? And this is the one thing that it boils down to, mate, you know?
Well, listen, when you've got people pulling down statues and, you know, I think, you know, this one, I don't think this one can go away, you know, it just can't, you know, but it's going to take a long time, though, still. It's not an overnight fix, is it?
It will, but just like everything, all it takes is one incident and it will change the whole course of history. I mean, it might involve a politician being harmed, or it might involve something else. Because look, we've seen so many, you know, black youngsters disappear, go missing. No one really bats an eyelid about it, you know. But when a kid goes missing in Portugal, and I'm not going to go into that one because I've got my own opinions on that family, it just shows you where the priorities are, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does, you know. But I don't think a black family would leave a child on their own.
Well, there you go.
They
wouldn't leave a child locked in a room with two other children while they go to a tapas bar with seven other people. And yeah, you know, yeah. Sorry.
Yeah, but like, it's a whole different story. Are they guilty? No, I don't think they're guilty. But you know, who leaves a child on their own when they go to a restaurant? I don't care how far it is. I don't care if you can see that. It's just ridiculous.
They couldn't see the apartment. It's bullshit. Yeah, they can see the roof of the apartment.
Yeah. It's ridiculous. Yeah. And these people are like, out shameless. They're educated people.
Yeah. Well, all I have to say is that they may not be guilty in the eyes of the law, but if you want to talk about negligence, then anyway.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
We can open up another can of worms here because I could go all night about that.
Yeah, but the reality was, if this was a black girl, we wouldn't even hear about it again.
Well, no, because the Met Police and Operation Grange wouldn't get 11 million quid from the taxpayers to look for this kid. They wouldn't. Yes. Would they?
No.
There you go. There you go. Case closed. No pun intended.
but you know, to answer your question, it's just got to, you know, it's got to, they've got to keep this going, and it's momentum, and it seems like it's not just an England thing, it's a worldwide thing.
Yep. I mean, they were even doing it in Cyprus and in Greece. Oh, wow. Yep. Wow, okay. Good to see. Anyway, Twitter handle.
Rod James Giggs.
Superb. We are on Twitter at Shoot the Defence. We also have an Instagram page. I've been slurring my words a lot these days and I haven't had a drink in like 12 years. So, until next time, take care.